to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Apparently there was a Zoom outage this morning, so we have a new live stream. Technology is always a fun thing.
Well, then at least that might explain why we were having so many issues with Dr. Mike.
That's true. It's not his fault.
No,
we'll tell him that it was his fault, though.
Okay. Assuming he never, he's not listening now.
I'll be able to text him later and be like, I don't know, man, you got to fix it.
You
for next week,
really
though.
Screwed that up. Thanks, Mike.
All right. So it is no secret that the American diet compared to our peer countries, not always great. For some of us, that's a choice of convenience and taste of just liking Skittles. That is my problem. But for many, it's because there is a lack of healthy options in the grocery stores in their neighborhoods, or a lack of grocery stores in general in their neighborhoods. And data from 2015 shows that 10% of Wisconsin, which is about 570,000 people, live in areas that meet the standards of what are called food deserts, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. So our guest this half hour to talk about the problem and potential solutions is Danielle Naback. Danielle is a dietitian who works on policy and community change to create better at food access and environments. Danielle, thanks for coming.
Thanks, Kristen.
Make sure that you're talking right into the mic.
Like this?
Yeah, like that. Okay. So how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
Good. So I guess the first question is, what is a food desert?
That probably depends who you ask. I would say, I prefer the term generally, actually I prefer a lot of terms, but I don't think food desert describes exactly what we're talking about a lot of the time when we talk about a food desert, particularly in urban areas, which is where my experience is. In a lot of urban areas, food deserts, really are more, it's more accurate to call them like food apartheid, because the lack of healthy food retail outlets is a result of intentional systemic acts that kept investments from communities like redlining. So redlining is when folks either can't get a loan to buy a home, but it can also happen with businesses too. So when folks or businesses are not able to locate in a neighborhood, or it's really unattractive to locate a business in a neighborhood, that results in, for healthy food retail, mostly things like corner stores being the source of a family's grocery supply for the week. So I would call it a food apartheid. That's really a more active term to signal that it was active disinvestment that caused that food environment.
So as far as, because it's also because grocery stores are expensive, right? There's not a lot of margins, or like the margin on a grocery store is very thin. And so the access to get loans is also because it's not always a great investment, even though it's such a vital part of a healthy community.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the margin on a lot of grocery stores is like something like 2%. And then the margin on healthy food too. So if you're thinking about like, why don't we just put healthier food in corner stores? The margin on fresh produce is really small as well, because you think about how fast that product can go bad. And it's not, a shelf stable product. You can keep that on your shelves for a long time, but a fresh head of lettuce or peppers or apples, that stuff goes bad really fast. And so when it doesn't sell, it's something that folks lose profit on.
And so what's the bigger picture? There's the element of the fact that the grocery stores aren't there, but what does this actually do to a community's health when they don't have access to healthy food?
It does a lot. I mean, food is really complicated, so access is one piece, but there's a lot more that goes into food, and our food choices are really complex. Even when we think about individually, they're complex, but also when we think about communities, they're complex. So individually, just because I have access, if I can walk to a grocery store, that doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to choose to walk to the grocery store and buy more nutritious foods. It's a lot about culture. It's a lot about how we're feeling that day. It's a lot about how we were raised. It's about what education do we have. It's about financial resources. So there's that piece of it. But then, there's also this makeup of our community, and it might not be safe for me to walk to the grocery store that's down the street. It might be I have to take 3 buses to the grocery store, and I have 3 kids to tag along with me in tow. So there's really a lot more. Like, the access piece is one thing, but there's so much more that goes into it. which I think really speaks to the complexity of the problem and the complexity of the solutions that we need to try to find. And so there's not a magic bullet for eating healthier foods and having more nutritious diet qualities. Having healthy food retail outlets in communities is one thing, but there's a lot of evidence that the saying, like, if you build it, they will come, that's actually not always the case for improving people's diet quality.
Really? Say more about that. So it's like, even if they provide, if there is an option, it's not always utilized?
Yeah. There's some research out there that shows even if you have a grocery store in a community that has lots of healthy food options, it doesn't necessarily mean that folks are going to choose to purchase those options, that they have the financial resources to purchase those options, that there was kind of active community engagement to understand what are the type of product that community might want. So an example is, you know, if I'm in a community on Milwaukee's South Side that's mostly Hispanic or Latino, and I put a grocery store in that serves, organic produce that maybe is not traditional to the diets of folks in Mexico or Puerto Rico or some of the other racial and ethnic diversity groups that we have down there, the food is probably not going to sell depending upon the price point, you know. So it's really, when we're thinking about adding access to neighborhoods, I think it really needs to be co-created with folks that live in community. There needs to be a whole lot to really make it so that if you build it, they will come.
So as far as understanding the competing priorities of, you work in Milwaukee, we live in Milwaukee, there's a lot of different problems, right? There's a crime problem, there is education, and, you know, like stuff with NPS. And so how much is this problem, because it is a problem, recognized in the web of things that need to get solved? Is it a high priority? Are the people in charge aware of it? Or where does it kind of fall as far as the urgency of trying to start to fix this?
Yeah, I think I could answer that question in a couple of different ways. I think across the board, when there are surveying efforts with Milwaukee residents, healthy food access typically is near the top of residents' desires and concerns, particularly for some areas that don't have a full-service grocery store. So we know over the years that hasn't changed. Folks do want to be able to access healthy foods that's close to their home. When we think about more organizational and maybe government strategies to address some of the complex problems that we have, I think that food has always been considered, but I don't know that the solutions are at the level that we need them to be in order to really move the needle on food security. I think oftentimes when we think about solutions for food access, we're thinking about emergency situations. So we're thinking about how can we get 2 weeks of food to a family who maybe is in crisis, or, you know, their SNAP benefits ran out for this month and they need a couple of extra groceries to get through the month. We're thinking about more of that one-time transactional opportunity to support someone's food intake, and we're not thinking about long-term, how do we make it so that we don't have to rely on food banks and food pantries, so folks, are able to use federal benefit programs for a while, but then eventually able to move off of those benefit programs as their family accumulates wealth. So I think that, you know, we spend a lot of time thinking about food in Milwaukee, but the strategies that have been employed, I would say maybe up until the pandemic, have been at a little bit of a lower level than what they need to be to really move the needle.
And the reason why we've been friends, but one of the reasons why I wanted to bring you on the show is because you were recently quoted in a new Wisconsin Watch article that talked about how Wisconsin is the land of plenty, but includes plenty of food deserts. And one of the things, and I know this may not be because you work in Milwaukee, but one of the things I thought was interesting is exactly what you said, that a lot of times I think for anyone who knows this term, whether it's food desert, food apartheid, the vision that pops up is urban areas, poorer neighborhoods in urban areas. Except this is also a problem in rural, poor areas. And so would you describe it the same way as far as when you said a food apartheid? Was it as intentional, or is it just because it's far? Or is it a totally different set of contributing factors when we're talking about rural Wisconsin versus Milwaukee or Madison?
Yeah, I'll first say that I'm not the expert in rural food access, but I think my opinion is that there probably are some of the same contributing factors, but I think it also is a lot harder when your population is a lot more spread out to have food outlets that make sense for serving a large group of people. But I think there is some different strategies in more rural areas of Wisconsin. So things like, how can we make food more mobile for people? So whether that's, you know, a bus that goes around and has groceries, if some grocery stores are able to service delivery to a larger network, that's a strategy. And then oftentimes a lot of the retail outlets in general in many of these rural communities are things like Family Dollar or smaller corner stores. And so there's actually been a lot of movement to try to increase healthy food in those types of retail outlets that might be traditionally more of where you would go to get your dish soap or your toilet paper. And for a long time, most of those retail outlets only sold shelf stable food, but there actually is a lot of strategy now in rural areas to have more produce in things like a Family Dollar.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. Is that the similar, like when you think about a Target or something like that, is like it's similar as far as solving a problem versus just making money? Because I think of like the fact that you can get your groceries from Walmart or from Target. And is that solving a similar problem, or is that just convenience for people who go to those stores for everything?
That's a good question.
Because it makes a lot of sense. If you start combining things as far as there are these Family Dollar stores that are walkable, and you start putting more better food in there, of how that solves it. But it's interesting to think if that also solves the same problem for other communities when you think about the bigger box stores. All right, well, we're going to take a break quickly. Our guest this half hour is Danielle Naback, who is a dietitian who works on food access in different communities across policy and community change. This is As Goes Wisconsin, and we'll be right back. Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Our guest this half hour is Danielle Naback, who is a dietitian who focuses on policy and community change to create better food access and environments. And we were talking about a large portion of the Wisconsin population, a lot of people in Milwaukee specifically, who do not have access to healthy foods. And that is a part of obesity, it is a part of heart failure, that so many of our health issues starts with what kind of food we have access to. And so we talked more about the problem previously, but what are some of the solutions that you've either seen worked, and how much of this is a top-down versus bottom-up thing as far as how you approach these problems?
Yeah, when you were talking about, Target and Walmart versus a Family Dollar or Dollar General, I was thinking about how a lot of those solutions are probably very top down, or at least managed by folks that are sitting in corporate, offices and positions. And sometimes there's strong community engagement for some of those efforts, especially in more rural places. But I think that there's so much opportunity to allow more community power building and decision making in choices about what our environments look like. Most often, we are experts in our own lived experience, right? We and our neighbors, we know what we need in order to make our access to food easier or our lives a little bit less stressful. And I think you know, we're blessed with a lot of nonprofits here in southeastern Wisconsin and Wisconsin in general. We have too many to count. I think
a lot of people who want to do a lot of good.
I think we win some awards for maybe having the most nonprofits per capita in the state or something like that, which is great, right? I mean, we want to help our neighbors, and also that oftentimes nonprofits are looked to for having the answers about what we should do, or even corporations are looked to for having a lot of power in that decision making. And I think we can learn so much just by listening and asking folks who are most impacted by some of the most severe inequities. So in this case, folks that are food insecure, we need to spend so much more time asking them, like, what will make your food access easier? What will help you eat better quality food? And first, like, how do you define better quality food? I don't necessarily think I should be defining what high quality nutritious food is for someone who doesn't come from the same background as me, has different familial and lived experiences than me. So I think we take a lot of agency away from folks in more traditional sort of nonprofit and healthcare approaches to eating better. And I think we need to really start, you know, balancing those power skills and returning resources, returning decision-making to folks that are the experts in their lived experience.
But how much of it also, because I think about this a lot, and I'm not the expert, but I think about it as you hear sometimes about what is allowed to be in food in Europe. Like whatever their equivalent of the FDA is, whether it's sometimes it's beauty products, but also a lot of processed food, of like what the ingredient list can be. And you compare the same product that's sold in France to sold in America, and the ingredient list and the multi-syllable words that you can't pronounce are on the ingredient list on the American version versus the, let's say, European version. And so how much of this is also what's being put into our food and then is like the easy access, let alone just the grocery stores. It's just the easy access to such bad processed food and not having higher standards for what can even be sold and be edible.
Yeah. There is a lot of political control over our food system here in the United States. And It's really incredible to do some research into especially products that you would find in a supermarket, particularly like shelf-stable products and also meat products. Most of those are coming from the same 3, 4, 5 conglomerates of companies that might have all these different brands. So you think you're buying from, you know, a cute little mom and pop shop because it's branded a little bit differently, but there's probably a pretty good chance you could link that back to a Nestle or, you know, a really big conglomerate. And that results in lower prices for us a lot of time at the grocery store, but also a lot less control for us as consumers in our food, because when there are such big conglomerates or even big agriculture and big farms, particularly a lot of our meat products are controlled by a couple, 1 or 2 or 3 or 4 growers in the United States. They have a lot of money to lobby at the federal government level. And those dollars are oftentimes what controls how we label our food, what we are allowed to put in our food. And so when you think about some of this like decision making around what goes into our food, a lot of that is at the federal government level. And oftentimes folks with the loudest voices in the room and the most money in the room get their way when it comes to lobbying at lots of levels, but particularly at the federal government level. And I think that's why we have such little control as consumers over what goes into our food. And we're seeing that today in terms of, yeah, we have cheap stores cheap prices at the grocery store, but a lot of things we might not want in our food.
Well, on a less depressing note that feels like we can't necessarily change the lobbying tactics of food companies, what are some local ways people can help or find more information, whether it's obviously in Milwaukee, but what are some of the ways that an average person like me could actually do something about food insecurity?
There's always food programs, like at food pantries and meal programs to volunteer with. Those are really important pieces of our community. I don't think they're the answer to solving hunger, but they do provide important networks for folks that might need some additional food resources. They're always looking for volunteers. I always like to turn it back to advocacy. I think we should all be talking to our local elected officials, particularly in smaller places. If you live in a small town, if you live in a suburb, if you live in the city or county of Milwaukee, these are pretty small places in compared to other states and cities. And we're very few degrees of separation away from our local elected officials. So if you care about food security, you should probably let your elected officials know and ask them to do something about it.
And vote.
Yes.
Vote. All right, Danielle, thank you so much for being here today. Danielle Nabak is a dietitian who works on policy and community change to create better food access and environments. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
All right, we'll take a break and we'll be back. Let me go on.